My name is Eric H., and I'm definitely an addict. First of all, I'd like to thank my higher power for waking me up this morning without the desire to use drugs. For the last 8 years, 8 months, and 4 days, that's been the winning formula for me. I really wish that y'all could see what I see right now. To look out and see my family, and in the background, see the water and the ocean out there. It's really like quite humbling. And my friends that know me, I'm no tough guy. I get emotional at the drop of a dime. So if that happens, you know. On my way here, all the way here, I've been praying and asking my higher power to guide me, to remove my image and my ego, to put some humility inside me so that I could declare his message and the message of Narcotics Anonymous. I could say I qualify as an addict because I used for many years and I lost. I paid a very high price for low living. And I also qualify to speak on this topic of illness and recovery because for the time I've been clean, some things have surfaced. You know, they talk about get a checkup from the neck up. And that's what our program is mostly about, or what we mostly focus on. But I was reading some of the new literature and it talked about how we have to do that checkup from the neck down and take care of our bodies. You know, the program is somewhat geared towards our behavior and our thinking and our spirit. But sometimes we neglect the care and the concern that we need to give to our bodies in recovery. My resume of illness and recovery. I'm 54 years old. I've been a diabetic since the age of 33. I remember when the doctor told me, you're diabetic. I said, diabetes? And I was afraid. I was going to have to shoot myself with insulin and my whole life was going to change. It was almost like when they told me I couldn't get high anymore. I thought I would never have fun. I wouldn't be able to do nothing. You know, I got to deal with this disease. And as a result of diabetes, I had bleeding in my eyes. They lasered them and stopped the bleeding, but there was too much blood in one eye, and I went almost blind in one eye, and they took the blood out. Then the same thing happened in my left eye. That's all fixed. Because this program and the work that I've done gave me the courage to face the challenges that if I was out there using, I probably would be blind today. Who knows? I got an amputation on my left foot, about 40% of that through diabetes, through diabetic ulcers, right? That turned into something called osteomyelitis, which is an infection of the bone. I still suffer from chronic ulcers in my feet. Thank God I don't look like what I've been through or what I go through. In the literature last night I was reading that an old timer talked about gratitude, and he said when you search it for gratitude and you can't find it, just thank God that you're not on fire. And start from there. I was like, okay, that might work. And it talked about being able to, you know, all the things that stopped me from growing as a person, spiritually and mentally, and keeping my behavior in check, they also stopped me when I'm facing these illnesses and disability. You know, what are people going to think? Am I going to be able to do the things that I used to do? What is my image? A guy who is an egomaniac with an inferiority complex, I was really good at dressing up the outside, and I was a crazy, sick, twisted individual on the inside. Basically, just, it all started when I was young. I was just an afraid little boy, man, that just wanted to be accepted. I came to the conclusion that, and I guess a lot of us might have, that when I was young, something happened to me. I don't know if I could pinpoint it, but it made me feel a certain kind of way. And all my life, whenever something comes up that makes me feel that uncomfortability, I react. But my thinking is upside down and twisted. But in growing and becoming more responsible and mature, I come to the conclusion that I can't afford to live my life based on the perceptions of a seven-year-old. And I've done that for a long time. All these challenges is an opportunity to grow. A pessimist sees everything as a challenge. And an optimist sees it as a challenge, but an opportunity to grow. I choose to live my life as an optimist today. I go to the doctor. I try to adhere to the doctor's directions as I try to adhere to this program to the best of my ability. I do fall short more often than not. But I'm getting better. We just keep pushing along. We just got to keep pushing. And also, I've learned that we can't do this alone. That when I'm faced with a dilemma about my health and my illness, I got to use the same proponents of this program that I use when I'm engaging in negative behaviors or bad memories or whatever my bugaboo happens to be for that day. I have to call my sponsor. I got to share with my network, not be afraid of what people are going to think of me. And someone probably has a little bit more experience in that area than I do, and they can help me. But you know, they say the squeaky wheel is the one that gets the oil. You know, this is an action program. You're going to get out of this thing what you put into it. And the same goes with life. You know, whether it's recovery or living on, you know, finding a new way to live. Life is definitely worth living, and I'm finding that out every day. I got married last year, right, from a guy that basically thought I was always going to be alone. You know, I was really good at manipulating people, places, and things, so they could say and believe things about me that I couldn't necessarily feel or say about myself. But this program, I always share this too, that, you know, all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty back together again, but God in Narcotics Anonymous put this addict back together again. I'm a productive member of society today. I can speak the King's English, but I could also kick the Willy Bobo with the brothers in the hood. And I think that's where all of our strengths lie, the diversity that all of us bring to this program. I just want to, you know how we at meetings and we get a 5-minute limit to share? And you told me I had 5 minutes to share, I probably would want to talk for 25 minutes. That they give me here. Now they tell me I got 25 minutes to share, and I was like, I just want to talk for 5 minutes to sit down. So, you know, so I got some stories that we might could identify with, right? I was somewhere, right, and a guy reached in his pocket and he pulled out a $20 bill. And he said to everybody, like I say to you, does anybody want this? Anybody want this $20? Oh, y'all rich? Y'all don't need no money? You would take it, right? He said, but if I took this $20 bill and crumpled it up, would you still want it? And everybody said, yeah. He said, but if I threw it on the ground and I stepped on it and I drug it through the mud and I, excuse my language, and I pissed on it and shitted on it, would you still want it? And so those people said yes. And you know why you would still want it? Because it didn't lose its value. Right? And that's what I say to all of you, no matter, and myself, no matter how much I've been stepped on, pissed on, shitted on, most of it I did to myself. I didn't lose my value in God's eyes. Right? And this program, I didn't lose my value either. That's why God created this program to save our lives. Right? To put us back together again. Whew. I think about what has happened to me in the last year. And how when you're faced with a situation that you might have thought you dealt with, it can easily come back and rear its ugly head, and you'll have to deal with it again. God will keep presenting you with the same problem until you get better dealing with it. And I found something out this year that I didn't even know was plaguing me. And we talk about illness and recovery, but there's physical illness, mental illness, and spiritual illness, right? And I talk about when I was getting married, I had this grand vision about how my father and my brothers, we were all going to go and get fitted for tuxedos and sit around and smoke cigars and have a great old time. And then my father called me and he says, man, I don't think I'm coming to your wedding. And I got to tell you, in that moment, it reduced me to the emotional state of a six-year-old. At 54 years old, right? And I wanted to wail out and cry, like, you know, why me? Why are you doing this to me? Can't you just, the things I always wanted in life, why can't you just do this one thing for me? And my wife looked at me, and I was curled up in the bed in a fetal position, twisted. She looked at me, she said, this the man that I married? And I was like, holy shit. But time passed, and I've shared about it in meetings, right? Come share at a meeting what you're going through. Because you can get, the squeaky wheel is the one that gets the oil. And people came up, and they talked to me, and I let time pass, and I went to therapy, and my therapist said, well, call him up. So I called him up, and we decided we was going to have lunch, and we had lunch, and we sat there, and I don't know, like in black culture, we jumped a broom. And my father gave me this African ceremonial broom, and he was adamant telling me that he was just loaning it to me, and that he wanted it back. So I said, after he gave me the broom, I said, well, you know, I really need you to come to the wedding. And he looked at me and he said, why? And I said, look, you're my father. I just want you to be there with me so I can show people where I come from, right? Because I remember when I was a kid, my mother was married a couple of times, and Kyle used to say, well, where's your father? And I remember my grandmother told my brother that I was a bastard. And people used to make fun of me, how many fathers you got? Right? And he looked at me and he said he was going to come. Right? And me and him hugged and we cried. Right? And intellectually, I always knew my father loved me. But for the first time in 54 years, I could feel it in my spirit that he really truly loved me. Right? That was an emotional hurdle, man. I've been carrying around my whole life and didn't even know. Didn't even know why I couldn't get close to people, why I pushed them away, why I always thought they had shit for me, right? But that was cool. And even then I said, man, even if he don't come, I'm all right with it. But I wouldn't have been able to clear that emotional hurdle, man, if not for this program and everything that has preceded it. You know, all the work that I've done, all the little things, the learning how to share, introspection, how to check myself out, take inventory of myself, and come to the conclusion. You know, I love the step that says we share with God ourselves and another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. I try to implement that in my life. And one of my first sponsors told me, when you work this step in your life, remember to keep it in the correct order. Because me, left to my own devices, I don't go to God, myself, and another human being. I got it twisted. I go to another human being, then I go to God, and I end up with myself doing things the way I think. So I'm presented with a problem. I say, God, can you help me with this problem? So I pray and I meditate on it. And then I go to myself, and I come up with the conclusion of the solution that I think I should do. But thank God for the check and balances of another human being, because if I'm honest and I keep it in the right order, I go to another human being and I say, this is what happened, this is what I think I should do. I pray to meditate. And a lot of times my friends in the network say, oh no, please don't do that shit. Right? Gotta keep it in the right order. I just want to say this is such a wonderful program. It saved my life. And it helped me build a life that I'm totally unwilling to give up. Just to go back a little about the illness thing and how my fear of sometimes still how people look at me, or I perceive how they might look at me, not how they look at me, how I perceive they might look at me, could paralyze me into not doing the best I can. You know, I want to withdraw, isolate, and we all know our disease wants to isolate us, get us alone so it can kill us. It talked about denial. And it says that the only true denial is when you don't know you're in denial. Once you say, I'm in denial, that really isn't true anymore. Because now you have to do something about it. Once you admit to it. I was kind of confused with that when I was reading it. So I just got to call my sponsor and ask him for clarity. Another funny story about just how recovery and life works. My good friend, my brother, and my son's godfather, we was putting together a basketball rim for my son, right? And we had it pretty much all together. We tried to stand it up, and the whole thing, like, fell down. It was, like, backwards, so we had to take it all apart and put it back together again, right? And he said, boy, I don't want my godson to shoot a basket and the thing fall down on his head. He ain't going to be my friend anymore. And I said, remember what I always be sharing a lot, that, you know, when we ask God for all these blessings and we ask him for things, don't forget to ask him for the instructions. Right? Because a smart guy like me, a lot of people know one of my nicknames is Simon Bar Sinister. Right? Because I will get a box with a bicycle and take the directions and throw it to the side because I know how to put it together. What are you talking about? I know what I'm doing. And now I'm riding this bike. About 2 weeks later, first of all, I got like 5 parts left over, right, that I didn't put, right? So now I'm riding this bike and it starts falling apart on me because I ain't read the instructions. And I could do that with my life. I could do that with my relationships. I could do that with my profession. I could do that with my health. You know, if I don't check my blood sugar at the right times and watch what I eat and take the medication as prescribed, right? I'd be in a lot of pain, man, right? And sometimes I have to take pain medication. And I take it as prescribed. And I probably take less of it than I could, which is good because I safeguard that. But what I don't want to do is gamble and do things the way I used to do and maybe not take it so that the pain becomes so great that I might think getting high is a valuable alternative. Just can't take it no more. That's what I used to do. You piss me off, I get in too much pain, I can't take it no more, I'll get high. Escape the pain, escape reality. So all the stuff that I read about illness, it all goes back to how this program works. But like I said, sometimes I can get it twisted. I can't speak for anybody else that I'd be so focused on correcting my behavior, working on my spiritual and mental recovery and well-being that I can forget about the physical. You know, I can forget about that. Because I look at the point, I said, man, it's really geared towards those things. You know, but what about the disability? You even talked about how we carry the message in disability and illness. You know, do we share where we are at? Are meetings accessible? Right? I come in, I got a big problem walking up and down stairs. Now I go to a meeting, it's in the basement, or the bathroom's way upstairs. Is that going to stop me from coming? I don't think so. You know why? Because I'll ask for help today. You know? And that's all we got to do, is ask for help. In winding down, I just want to thank all your people. I want to thank all you guys, my family, for coming out and helping ourselves. I want to thank all the people from my area. It's really comforting to look out and see familiar faces, you know. I mean, I'm like I said, I asked for the big stage, but then you get to the stage and it's like, you know, it's really humbling, you know. All right, well, my name is Eric H. Thanks for letting me share.
Take it away.